All right, welcome back to the Atlantic Hour. I am your host, James, and with me, my co-hosts, Tom and Eva.
Apparently, we're in a 2000 sitcom after that intro. The intro is called Piqued My Interest.
Thanks for that.
Sorry. No, they'll steal it.
Sorry, no, I'm sorry.
Can we talk about some politics?
We have to.
Yeah. Wednesday morning.
Basically, the world's not doing too great at the moment.
No.
I feel like a lot's happened. And it all seems to really be centering around the US.
This is our international podcast.
Yeah, we've it's across the pond. About America. No, we could talk. We'll talk a bit about Germany as well, I feel.
Okay. I'll let you lead that.
Oh, okay. I didn't know we were doing it straight away. sorry.
I wanted to just speak a little bit about Elon Musk first, though.
Just a little bit.
Well, they sort of.
He's not that relevant.
So let's talk a little bit about Doge and what that
great
means to
name.
The rest of the world.
Great
yeah.
Name.
Yeah.
So obviously Elon has recently argued that with Trump support, his team at the Department of Government Efficiency are going to almost dice up the federal government, and that Trump was elected with a mandate to do that for the American people. There's been a lot of criticism and backlash. Several federal judges have already put injunctions on the government's ability to do that. However, Trump has backed Elon and said that this is something that the administration is in favor of. However, he did also check him, saying that if Elon overreaches, then there will be limits on his power. But as you said, since we're talking about this globally, what do you think the idea of a weakened federal government in the US means for other countries in the world?
Well, I mean, the obvious answer is the removal of aid, which has obviously been the headline.
Yeah.
Which is obviously bad. We spoke about it a bit last week.
Well, I think it's more just like it's the whole theme of this 3 weeks of his presidency has been helping the rich get richer and the poor get poorer.
Mm.
Especially in terms, if you look at countries like, especially in like sub-Saharan Africa, you've like just cut like millions of like government funding to like healthcare organizations. Mm. I think like 5,000 healthcare professionals lost their jobs in Kenya. That might be wrong, but and it's not even just like I was like, oh, they can get their jobs back. It's more just like the relationship the US has made with these countries is just. It's just being completely.
That's probably the most damaging thing for America is that the relationship with countries in the Middle East, Middle East and Africa, especially like Jordan, they had an emergency meeting yesterday with the government of Jordan to basically tell them that we're not going to fund your government anymore.
Yeah.
But the government of Jordan go, well, you sort of made us reliant on money. They pay them their budget. Like they can't function as a country without it. But obviously, the America wants certain things in return that. Like Jordan can't offer.
Mm. Yeah, and I think we talked a bit about this last week in terms of Donald Trump has actually been talking about a third term, but if that obviously doesn't happen, Democrats do come in again.
And just a recent development, literally yesterday, Trump fired the Inspector General of the US Agency for International Development. So that's something that Tom touched on, which is all this US aid to foreign countries for humanitarian reach and trying to create stability in these nations. Trump has said he doesn't really care about. He's tried to remove the American bureaucracy from having any level of intervention in this and following a policy of American isolationism. So America first, and we only care about our own interests. And I think the interesting thing is the American people want that. Like, that's why they've put him in power.
Yeah.
But at the same time, when you break it down, I think a lot of people also think that America should have some role in trying to...
But also, it's not isolationism, because he's getting involved everywhere. Like he's simultaneously removing aid from other countries, but at the same time, you know, he's going into Canada, Panama.
Yeah, it's a
Greenland. It's hypocritical. And also, he's also, you know, now we've got Musk getting involved in European politics. So, you know, he's...
Well, I think that's what you made an interesting point, right?
It's a very absolutist kind of expansion. It's either we're in control or we're not involved.
Yeah.
You know, either
it's like we're not helping. We're not going to help you.
We'll help in Gaza, we'll help in Ukraine, but the thing in Ukraine, they want of Ukraine's natural resources in return for continuing to fund it. Obviously, in Gaza, they want Gaza. Well, Trump wants it to make a lovely resort.
They said they weren't going to... there was kind of no hope of Ukraine's original borders being restored.
Yeah. Which is what we said, weeks ago. Trump will make the deal. It will be to give Russia back those two original states.
So he can be the president who stopped the war in Ukraine without actually helping Ukraine. I don't know. I think what I found striking, he called everyone who worked for USAID criminals, who were working for a criminal organisation. I'm not entirely sure what he meant by that. I'm not sure if anyone knows.
Well, I think he just sees it as corrupt, and he sees American money flowing out of America going into...
It's like American money should be centred around American
resources.
There
will be in every sort of massive vat of money, there will be people skimming off the top, and there will be people... you look at a lot of these aid organisations, you don't know how they're structured, and you don't know how much money, you always find out when you donate to charities, 90% of their money goes on marketing, and you're that's not really what I'm interested in. I don't want to pay for an ad campaign. But I'm sure, on a very small, very small percentage, there is corruption within USAID, and, tackling that might be a better way of dealing with it.
And but, not to fire every single worker.
Yeah, but it's also that's how he goes, though. That's his sort of MO, isn't it? It's find a flaw and find something that they don't like. If it's, examples of it in the UK, they've picked out, Elon Musk has picked out this one case from the 90s and it's thrown it all over the UK papers.
Saying that Keir Starmer raped Britain.
Yeah. It's the way they do it. They destroy organisations by pointing out a genuine flaw, I'm sure. But, just because one bit's broken doesn't mean the whole system needs to be destroyed.
I think, your point is an interesting one about the fact that, it's all about process, right? So, as you said, the Trump playbook is take something that could be plausible.
Yeah.
Which is the federal bureaucracy is bloated and funding is... or too widely dispersed, and potentially that's coming out of the pockets of the American people.
Yeah.
And then sensationalize it to the point where it doesn't even make sense anymore. I think something Musk said was that American taxpayers' money is going to fund research for shrimps on treadmills or something.
Yeah, yeah. that weird press conference. The weird press conference yesterday where he's just standing next to Donald, sort of behind him on a table.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he's talking about there's a mine in somewhere where all 50 years worth of retirement papers are kept, and it's this sounds unbelievable.
And the fact that he has quoted that, as you were mentioning before, U.S. federal workers are taking tens of millions of dollars as employees at USAID without substantiating that with any evidence. Trump has come down saying that because Musk is a special government employee, he doesn't have to reveal how he's gone about his process in the face of media scrutiny. And I think on an international stage, this probably does create some level of worry about America's position. It's always been seen as a country that, has its flaws, but is going to be a protector of democracy and a steward towards something better internationally. And I think this is probably a categorical time when other nations realize they can't rely on America. As you said, with the tariffs, I think that it's not just about tariffs. It's about the fact that America is now an antagonist. to a lot of countries where before they could see them as a source of support and a source of security. And Trump doesn't care. Trump likes the drama. And the fact that he's put Elon Musk so close to his nexus of power is a sign that he wants people who want to break the system as well. Mm. So
I was just thinking that I wonder how different we'd sort of look at this whole USAID story perhaps if it wasn't Elon Musk who was leading it, a person who, as you said, antagonized every country. Like, he's not popular in Britain, he's not popular in Germany, he's not popular, but like he's sort of this weird billionaire who's decided that he's going to fix the world by taking money away from poor people.
Well, it's just the richest man in the world taking money away from poor people, as you said.
Yeah.
It's just an egotistical power play.
Mm. Yeah, it's so... like,
there is some irony about him talking about people skimming tens of millions of dollars off of the federal government when his entire position is an inherent conflict of interest when you've got someone who, as you said, has a stake in...
SpaceX, who take millions and millions in federal grants every year.
So...
And he's trying to buy OpenAI now as well. That another thing that receives lots of federal money. Like, it's all seeming very corrupt, and I have a feeling in the next 10 years there will be some sort of documentary about how much money the American people gave Elon Musk. In a mission to get Elon Musk to save
the
money.
Another big point is how much longevity do these plans have? Obviously, they've come through with a lot of force, and there's been a lot of legislation in a very short time period that's been pushed towards this idea of America being almost a strong player, in a sense. I feel like Trump wants to create that image of energy.
Yes.
And it's all about the media perception that America is on a course towards something better. This is what he promised the American people. He's delivering these promises really quickly. But the key takeaway here is that a lot of these policies have received a lot of backlash.
Yeah.
And one thing that, if you look at the track record across the initiatives they put in place, the Trump administration doesn't like is pushback from other institutions. So the tariffs on Mexico and Canada, he was so fervent about that during his presidential campaign, and yet as soon as there was volatility in the markets after he announced that he was going to put forward these policies, he rescinded them before they even happened.
Now we're sort of a week over that. Who do you think won out of that sort of conflict? Did Trump strengthen his position, or
I think that Mexico and Canada probably,
because they folded
came
as well,
out quite well though, because
did they? I think Canada.
At the same time, they agreed to things that they probably already had some kind of initiative in place for, and almost got Trump to be quiet effectively for a while.
But his demands were basically just like for Canada specifically, they were already doing what he asked them to do.
True,
couldn't he let them sweat a bit more, I don't know, it felt like, I know Trudeau's not, like, he's in an awkward position where he's not going to be the president or prime minister, whatever they have there,
prime minister.
I could kind of feel like he could have left it a little bit longer. Like, I feel like Mexico may be different because obviously that was a bigger ask, and obviously, you know, it's a more, they import and export more. But, like, I felt like with Canada, like, I felt like it did look quite weak on Trudeau's side that he, all, like, for such minor demands, he sort of just went, yeah, fine. Like, and I get maybe, you know, for the economy and all that, that's his job is basically just to keep the country steady until the election. So he probably did the right thing, but I'm just saying, like, I don't feel like what could have been a much greater victory for him.
Yeah, he didn't fight as hard as he could.
And for Canada as well, who obviously have quite a lot of national pride right now.
For real, yeah, go Canada. Should we talk a bit about Israel?
Yes.
So the ceasefire, which was already fragile, is seemingly even more fragile now.
Yes.
So Netanyahu's basically said that if the hostages aren't released by Saturday,
the ceasefire is effectively over.
And obviously it ties back to the US because Trump has said that if hostages aren't released, then all hell will break loose. What that means, I've got no idea. I'm not sure.
Well,
what Trump's
again, look
plan
at Israel's track record with the conflict. They haven't exactly been the most forgiving. So I think that Netanyahu will likely follow through on his promise. And bringing it back to America's intervention in this situation, I feel like Netanyahu probably feels strengthened with Trump's backing.
Definitely.
More so than potentially even under Biden's administration.
Yeah.
So he probably feels that he has license to make this claim in a way that he might not have felt at the start of the year.
Yeah, I think you definitely saw towards the end of the Biden campaign that, or Biden's term, is that Biden was definitely going after Netanyahu and they wasn't backing him as hard as he did before.
Mm.
And obviously with this ICC conviction that he's got, you know, he can only really rely on America now.
Yeah.
Trump was quite strong on him. Like, you know, they're going to support him. I think I'm worried Netanyahu might actually go through with this stupid turning Gaza into a resort plan.
And then if that does happen, then you really sever relationships with Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
Who Egypt. Yeah, Riyadh's basically come out and said that. They launched like a massive like media attack against Israel because that was like a US-Israel discussion that was centered around healing relationships between Israel and Saudi Arabia.
Mm.
And Riyadh said, well, that is all completely dependent on whether there's a Palestinian state set up. And obviously, if then Trump does come into Gaza and make it a holiday destination, that's obviously not an autonomous Palestinian state, severing relationships with Saudi Arabia. So you're really just turning countries against each other.
Mm. Well, no, they're all turning against one country.
Well, yeah.
We might look in the world in 4 years and it's like America and its allies and sort of the world against it. I know it could be quite interesting.
Ooh, that's a good like...
Whether like...
It's a good like, you know, film title.
Well, no, it's quite interesting. Like, it seems like sides are forming. Like, recently there's been this new AI summit and the, like, France, I think Germany, a lot of countries have signed it. UK and Britain... UK and US haven't signed it.
Yeah.
You know,
Well, it's sort of just like the world's turning into blocks, like different blocks. Like there's no serious you have these allied organizations, but that's sort of like
they're weakening.
It's like at like after World War II when worlds were like carved up, like the world was carved up into, you know, different sections. That's sort of happening again. And you have like different alliances forming.
Mm.
Just to play devil's advocate on that point.
Yeah.
I feel like the almost geopolitical like blocks, as you said, have been in place for a while now. No, that was something that
Biden was concerned with
Russia and China.
I know, but that's been like a recent issue within like the 21st century. As in, like we had for a long time, like there was some like there has been like work towards kind of having like a harmonious allied relationship. I feel like now with these different, like especially in the Middle East, you have...
I think Trump's whole stick is unpredictability, right? So, as you said, a lot of his policies are contradictory. You want to be seen as hawkish to China, and yet you're the one who reinstated TikTok after it was previously... Mm. Banned under the Biden administration under a policy that had bipartisan support, and yet you want to then impose 10% tariffs on China to the point where it's hard to follow what America's policy is with some of these nations. You want to...
Again, he had concepts of a plan. He didn't have a plan.
Yeah.
And now we're seeing this concept.
Yeah. Stop getting on the guy. He has concepts.
Like in the war in Ukraine, and yet you also want to do it in a way that is useful to Russia, yet America's policies towards Russia is that they're antagonists towards each other. And you want to see... You want to be seen as being friendly to Europe. As, again, before he even started his presidency, he went with Macron to Notre Dame and had that big show of solidarity with France. And yet you then want to impose 25% tariffs on the European Union starting on the 12th of March. So I don't think... within his foreign policy goals that he even knows what he really wants.
No.
I think he's still figuring it out. And I think that a lot of countries are jumping through hoops to make it seem that they are still in step with America. Even to the point where Peter Mandelson literally the other day said that the UK are working on trying to be as closely allied with the US as possible, and he rescinded any previous negative comments he'd made about like them, Trump. Despite saying that
he was
a danger to the world.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, I think you said this like 2 weeks ago, that Trump just thinks about short-term policies.
You just want, well, I think short-term media wins. Yeah. I think something we know about him from his last presidency, he just basically watches Fox News 24/7.
Yeah. Mm. So like, he's on it half the time.
Yeah. So I think like this sort of like, he's so sporadic in his thinking because I think he sees stuff on TV or like he sees stuff and all people tell him about stuff and he goes, well, I must fix that. Like, so obviously someone recently has told him about paper straws because he signed an executive order ban. Like, but I think that's quite a telling thing. I think even though it's quite funny, like he signed an executive order changing the material we make straws out of. Like that's almost quite dictatorial.
Well, I also feel like there are so many other issues.
But it's also like the sort of thing like, you hear like stories of like crazy like Pol Pot changing the side of the road people drive on in his country because he had a dream about it. Like that's the sort of thing like crazy dictators do. I've had a vision. All straws must now be plastic again.
It's so. Well, he doesn't care about climate change.
Well, yeah, obviously, but like it's just quite interesting. Like, why does he feel like he has to do that? Who is the plastic straw lobby really that?
To show that he's in control of even plastic straws. He's so powerful. Yeah. He's in control of the Middle East straws.
But I think it's just a media win again. It's like TikTok. Yeah. It's releasing the JFK things that we're never really going to find out about. It's about plastic straws. It's about going on the news. People going, Donald Trump has done this. They're like, oh, I've been saying I hate plastic. I've hated plastic straws ever since.
Yeah.
I can't believe like every middle-aged dad is absolutely happy right now.
Yeah.
Mm, I think the key takeaway is that, as you said, it's a presidency that is pervasive. This man is everywhere you look. He's been at the Super Bowl. He's private jetting around the country. He wants to show that he's still in the driver's seat, and the executive is going to be calling the shots now. And the fact that Congress, the one branch of government that is meant to definitively check the president, has done nothing to try and curb this almost freewheeling joyride through the American legislative procedure and to try and ram through the federal government, which is meant to be a strengthened institution, is indicative of the fact that no one wants to stop him in this country.
Mm. Not yet. I think we spoke about this last week, but we spoke about this pyramid of like the power in America. And sort of obviously at the moment, like in the first 2 years especially, the president and the executive are going to be at the top. But we've seen from Obama, we've seen from most presidents that eventually the legislative branch catch up. Like Donald Trump's making laws so quickly they can't keep up with them, but eventually they will. And once they do, I feel like that you'll see more pushback.
Mm.
I feel like he's making a great show of it. Like that whole on his inauguration, he's just sitting there taking questions, signing the executive orders. Like I'm doing this. I'm but most of the stuff he couldn't do. I'm ending birthright citizenship. You can't do that. It's in the Constitution.
Mm.
Like I feel like eventually he's going so quickly, and he's probably going quicker than any president ever has. Not that he's going to burn out, but there's going to be, there's only so many plastic straws out there. Like, you got to keep, he's going to have to slow down. I think it's when Congress are going to sort of slow down and go, well, you can't do that. You definitely can't do that. You definitely can't do that. Yeah. And then I think that's when we'll see the same frustrations that every single president has gone through. Mm-hmm. Like with Biden's infrastructure bill, Obama's Medicaid, Medicare stuff. And I think this will be Obama's cutting of the federal government will be. Obviously, that's his big election manifesto promise, and I think that'll be what gets caught up, what might make people turn on him slightly.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if you both think that the backlash will be enough, though?
No, it won't. Because ultimately he has such a core. Like, people would die for him, quite literally. It's insane. Yeah.
There's a lot of instances where it's people standing against him in the minority, in small ways. So, i.e. Gavin Newsom on the tarmac, greeting Trump, despite him trying to avoid him and still trying to hold his own within the state. So I feel like it's going to be up to Democrats in individual states to try and show that they still have strength, that they back their own mandates despite the strength of the executive, and they're trying to serve the interests of the American people. Because no matter what anyone says, Trump still had a small victory in terms of the popular vote.
Yeah.
So the mandate might be conclusive, but it's not by any stretch overarching.
But have you heard heard anything from a Democrat in the last month?
Yeah, where's Harris?
I haven't heard anything. I saw she was at an NBA game the other day, and no one even not even noticed. No. She wasn't even she was just in the back. Like, I feel like
the Democrats need to do a bit more.
Yeah, exactly. I think one thing you can't, in the Biden administration, if you'd ask what's Trump up to, you sort of knew he was in court, he was doing X, he was doing Y, he was saying stuff. Like, you knew his opinion. Like, and obviously because the Democrats don't have a leader now, it's difficult, and that's sort of a weird aspect of the American system, is that if your presidential candidate loses, you basically don't have a leader. Obviously they have one, but they're not the same way as they are in the British political system.
Yeah.
We've heard nothing from them. We're probably not going to hear that much out of them for the next 4 years. Mm. Well, at least next 2 years, obviously midterms and then the new presidential campaign. Mm. But I just feel like that's another thing that's just lacking, is any real vocal opposition from the second biggest party in the country.
I wonder why that is, though.
I think that the Democrats are still figuring out the best way of combating Trump when they had anticipated a victory. And the potential is probably to underestimate a man who, throughout his presidential campaign, seemed to only have a spirit and a will of fight and drive to end the establishment without talking directly about the context or the specifics of how he was going to do that. And yet when you look at his first 3 weeks in office, there clearly was an infrastructure and a team of very smart people in place to try and destroy the federal bureaucracy.
Yeah, another thing that the Democrats don't have is a celebrity. They've lost Joe Biden. Joe Biden was a person that every American knew. They don't really have, now that Kamala Harris has basically decided she doesn't want to be seen, they don't have any sort of recognizable face.
Yeah, true.
The thing is, though, if you're a Democrat, you've got 4 years before you have another shot, and most of the people who are probably reviewing themselves as contenders for a election matchup in 2028 don't want to be spotlighted right now in the instance that they get forgotten by the time that...
Yeah, but they don't have anyone who people know. I wonder what Hillary Clinton thinks about this.
They have Bernie Sanders and AOC, but the problem is...
But neither of them will ever be president.
Neither of them would win.
Yeah. AOC just got passed up for an important select committee.
Mm. Yeah.
Over... another 70-year-old white man fits into the Biden and Chuck Schumer mold.
Yeah.
But I think that's almost... They just need someone everyone knows. Not necessarily run or beat anything. Just as to be... Well, Hillary Clinton was spotted doing X.
What you need is an anti-Trump and Musk. Yeah,
all I've heard is that Joe Biden signed with a talent agency. That's all I've heard from the Democrats.
It's time to release Michelle.
Michelle's the perfect choice, really.
Well, she's not.
Just to be a person.
Have you seen, Tom, America doesn't want a black woman right
now. No, they don't. That's obvious. But I'm not saying
a white man.
Yeah,
but not to be president, but to represent the Democrats, to be like, I'm a Democrat and I am talking about this. I don't.
Do you know who I think could do it? Oh, I think get Timothy Chalamet out there.
Timothy Chalamet? What? Why would I have Timothy?
Famous
he's
Democrat.
Probably a Republican. Probably a Republican.
Yeah.
Why Timothy Chalamet?
Because he's just eccentric enough to stab people's imaginations in the way Musk has.
So Musk versus Chalamet. That's the new VP debate.
That would be brilliant.
That would be shock. I'm not sure what Chalamet has to offer with us. He could probably sing, like act.
He can do anything.
He can do everything.
He can
yeah.
fly. You've seen the Bob Dylan movie. The new Willy Wonka movie.
Yeah.
Wow.
Is it new anymore?
Yeah, I was going to talk about the Bob Dylan biopics probably.
Oh yeah.
You've seen Dune 2.
He can ride a worm.
Oh goodness.
He can fight Austin Butler with a knife.
Yeah. With Florence Pugh, all that
and
good
that's,
stuff.
And that's and my that. President.
Alright, I think that's all we have time for this week, but thank you very much, and we'll be back next week to discuss more global politics.
See you.
Bye.